Good evening, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio Network. You can find us, of course, every day at blogtalkradio.com. That starts Mondays, 6 p.m. Eastern. The Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Absolutely. Mamma Mia, no Sharia. Tuesdays. Vito sometimes drops in. Vito or Al, they're going to try and figure out what they're going to do on that day. And then Wednesdays, of course, 6 p.m. Eastern for the time being, Hank Jones Poly Sports with me, Hank Jones, where politics and sports collide. Thursdays. Well, I'm going to be doing a show tomorrow, probably around 1 o'clock Eastern time. It's not going to be a Poly Sports themes. It's going to be my hankerings, sort of just stuff that I got a hankering to talk about. Tomorrow I'm going to be talking about some Second Amendment issues. And I'm going to feature a little bit more of Tommy Bolin's music. And Fridays, Vito is dropping in on occasion right now while Andrew is on hiatus. Conservative Casual Friday. Vito was on last week. That's 12 noon Eastern. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern time, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. Sundays, Eric is in, Cross and Crescent discussion, sort of a real interfaith dialogue. And of course, there's various ways you can interact with all our shows. You know what? You come right in, log into blogtalkradio.com, get your little account. You can go into chat, look for the live button, and then when you get to the live, you go down to the bottom right, and you'll see Global Patriot Radio. It'll tell you how many people in their chat room. Right now, there are three, myself, Duck Northwest Media, and Vito Esposito himself here in the chat room. You can also call in 319-527-6706. That is our call-in. You can listen that way. You can talk that way. You put your finger on the one on your phone, and then it gives a little hand up. Right now, Hawkeye Mike's hand is up because I am going to be calling on him shortly. He's going to be in later, too, but I'm going to call on him earlier and maybe oftener because of some of the crap going on in this plan. You can also email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Head over to Twitter, @hpolysports. A lot of good follows over there, a ton of them, actually. Vito's on there as well, as a matter of fact. And, of course, go to Facebook and type in Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thing there is, I'm really there to get my daily free treat on Candy Crush and my free spin. I hate to admit it, especially since my nephews tell me Candy Crush is for old people. Okay, I'm here, of course, in the Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with the little Aussie, fed already, courtesy of me. Mrs. Hank is back. She was out visiting in Seattle. She is back working hard over in Acoustic Hankland. Today's first internet laughy, it is from Twitter. It's a cartoon meme. Young girl raising her hand and saying, "Mom, what's a contradiction?" And mom answers, "Believing that 18-year-olds couldn't understand their student loans, but 7-year-olds can choose their gender." Oh, that was a good one. Okay. Another one. This is more of an advisory. Really true. It says, if government can break laws during an emergency, government will create emergencies in order to break laws. I'm not even going to write that. That's just fact. That is just fact. If government can break laws during an emergency, government will create emergencies in order to break laws. I'm not even sure that that needs explanation or justification of any kind because it's fact, like I said. Let's get to our obituaries. Last Wednesday, we lost former Wofford College Little All-American, as well as Baltimore Colts player, a Hardee's franchisee, Spartan Foods creator, and Carolina Panthers original founder and owner Jerry Richardson at the age of 86. He was the first former player since George Halas to become a league owner. He was, of course, later canceled by various influences. He sold the Panthers in 2018. Ironically, most of Richardson's charitable gifts have not been to the NFL charities or the Charlotte community. Nope. He has given most to his beloved alma mater, Wofford College. Way to go, sir. Do not give to those who only seek to take in the first place. Last Thursday, we lost jazz saxophonist Wayne Shorter at the age of 89. Among his credits, he played with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. He played with Miles Davis Quintet, Weather Report. He was a founding member of Weather Report. He also produced Ronnie Laws' Pressure Sensitive album. That alone is good for the Pantheon. Most notably, in terms of fame and crossover, he played the incredible, fantastic saxophone solo on the title track of the iconic 1977 Steely Dan album, Asia. Remember that sax solo? Good stuff. Friday, we lost actor Tom Sizemore. Now, he was most noted for his role as Sergeant Mike Horvath in the 1998 movie Saving Private Ryan. He was just 61. He had suffered an aneurysm a couple weeks ago. They had told his family, prepare for end of life. Unfortunately, it came. He gained notoriety for his drug and sex abuse issues. He even appeared on Dr. Drew's Celebrity Rehab, and later another incarnation of that show called Sober House. By the way, it should be noted that damn near everyone who appeared on that show has ended up dying. Seriously. The fact Tom Sizemore made up several years' appearance is almost noteworthy. He was actually, he had a very impressive list of credits, and he was I thought he was a really likable guy, but just had, you know, had some issues. Saturday, we lost the bass player for the Notorious Cherry Bombs, Michael Rhodes, passed away from pancreatic cancer at age 69. He was known really for his extensive session work. He supported all these people on albums, session music: J.J. Cale, Dolly Parton, Lonnie Mack, John Anderson, not the one from Yes, but the one who sang Swingin', Michael Martin Murphy, Randy Travis, Hank Williams Jr., Delbert McClinton, Kenny Rogers, Roseanne Cash, Reba McEntire, Vince Gill, Glenn Campbell, and Etta James. Yeah, I'd say that's pretty notable session work. And then Sunday, we lost the last original member of Lynyrd Skynyrd. Guitarist Gary Rossington passed away at age 71. Although no cause was listed, he had suffered from periodic heart issues, had undergone emergency heart surgery as recently as 2021. Then yesterday, we lost entrepreneur Tom Love at the age of 85. Now you're thinking, who's that? He was the founder of those Love's gas station, country store, travel stops you see along the highways. There's over 600 of them in the U.S., so don't tell me you've never seen one. Now, he's already successful. He had owned restaurants and car washes, but he came upon the idea of utilizing abandoned gas stations to build a business of self-serve gas stations merged with country stores in the 1960s and 70s. Yeah, he was Cracker Barrel with gas. Think of it that way. His father was once president of Kerr McGee Oil, thus I would say he came by his profession somewhat naturally. He and his wife Judy also formed the Loves Family Foundation. Definitely a life well lived. Godspeed, Tom Love. Hey, don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and messaging service for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, service-oriented company, information gathering, government entity, believe it or not. They get the job done. They do great work, top-flight equipment. They also work with remote staff. So if you are not in the market for their services, but you are in the market for a job and like the idea of doing remote work, give them a call. If you need their services, do the same. They can be reached at 800-555-3738, or, of course, visit them on the web, alliancecommunications.com. More internet laughing. There's a ton of it. Again, more of an advisory here. It's a meme slash photo of tennis great Novak Djokovic. noting that he has hit a snag in entering the U.S. for tournament play because he refuses to get vaccinated. Actually, that may be why he is still ranked number one, as he's probably the only guy on the tennis tour who won't collapse in a crumpled heap on the court. Note, he's actually had COVID on two different occasions. Anyway, the meme quotes Bill Maher, who said, and I quote, "A sport where you stand alone in the middle of a stadium, outside, in a country where damn near everyone has already had it. This country is stuck on stupid. It just is." Someone else in that little exchange noted that it's unfathomable that we fear one unvaccinated tennis player while our southern border teams with illegals who carry Lord knows what. That's an excellent point, truly. Bill Maher, I got to say, you know, I rarely agree with this guy, but he does have some really, really cogent, almost conservative thoughts, frankly. And I'll get to that a little bit later. Not so much Bill Maher, but just conservative thinking and rational thinking. They're not mutually exclusive, of course. They are also, of course, not necessarily tied to one another exclusively either. So anyway, some quickies. After three confirmation attempts, Biden nominee Gigi Sohn has withdrawn from consideration to serve on the FCC. West Virginia Democrat Senator Joe Manchin saying he would vote against confirming her. I think she saw the writing on the wall finally. Finally got the communication memo, huh? A military sniper who was present at the final withdrawal of the U.S. from Kabul's Ahmed Karzai Airport says the suicide bomber who had approached and killed 183 people, including 13 U.S. military personnel, says it could have been stopped. It could have been stopped, except for snipers who were at the ready and with legit intel were prevented from doing so. Isn't that great? An informal poll, to be sure. There are actually almost 15% of some given group that voted Gavin Newsom is a better governor than Ron DeSantis. Let that sink in. Good God. On the other hand, like Brother Tommy would say, why am I reading those polls? And really, there's far more than 15% of this population that's brain dead. So Vito might not like this. Al might, although I'm still confused because I thought both of them were against LIV Golf Tour. And according to Vito, Al is not so much against it. Anyway, very inspiring response from LIV golfer Harold Varner III. It was made to an obvious liberal, someone who thought they were all progressive and really brilliant. This liberal made it all about color, of course, with this post. What's devastating about your choice to join LIV is that you were poised to be a huge influence on kids of color coming to this wonderful game. LIV has no audience, so you'll have no voice. You'll be personally wealthy and inspire no one. Truly sad. And he also had a hashtag was a fan. What does that say? See, Vito, if that doesn't convert you to LIV, nothing will. Literally, this, again, let me read this. What's devastating about your choice to join LIV is that you were poised to be a huge influence on kids of color coming to this wonderful game. LIV has no audience, so you'll have no voice. You'll be personally wealthy and inspire no one. Truly sad. But Harold Varner III had a brilliant response. What he said. He said, "Thanks, John. I disagree. I will help and inspire my community of all colors." Brilliant and beyond insightful. I'm betting that John, whoever he is, doesn't get it. Just betting. Okay, so there's a news story out that a former White House official was killed as a result of severe jet turbulence. Wow, right? Then we find out she was with her husband, one of her sons, and two flight crew members. None of the others were killed. In fact, none of the others were injured. Double wow, right? Okay, now, guess which two administrations she worked with during her time as a senior advisor and as an associate director of the White House Office of Management and Budget. Here's a bit of the story. I'm pirating Yahoo's version of it. I'm not sure where they stole it, but it doesn't matter. Oh, they took it from WAPO. Okay. A former White House and international development official was killed last week after the business jet she was flying in hit severe turbulence in New England, officials said Monday. Dana Hyde, 55, of Cabin John, Maryland, was flying with her husband and one of her sons on an aircraft owned by rural broadband consulting firm Connexon, company said. Neither of her relatives nor the two members of the flight crew were injured, according to the company and the FAA. She was taken to a hospital in Hartford after the Bombardier jet heading from Keene, New Hampshire to Leesburg Executive Airport in Virginia made an emergency landing, Connecticut State Police said. The incident is being investigated by the NTSB. They were returning from a trip to visit schools in New England. Her husband, Jonathan Chambers, said in an email to employees and clients to Connexon, which is based in Kansas City. Dana was the best person I ever knew. She was a wonderful mother to our boys, and she was accomplished professionally. She loved and was beloved. Now, on their way home, Chambers said, the plane suddenly convulsed in a manner that violently threw the three of us. My wife was badly injured. They'll analyze weather data as well as information from the flight recorder, flight data recorder, and cockpit voice recorder. She was a special assistant during the Clinton years. She was also a senior advisor at the State Department during President Barack Obama's administration. Earlier in her career, she was counsel on the 9/11 Commission. You know, Hawkeye Mike and I have a friend, former roommate in college. I won't go into it, but even he was very liberal, always was, but he said 9/11 made him a single-issue voter. But even he said half of the people that served on the commission or as counsel for the commission should have been witnesses, as in almost damn near adversarial witnesses. So anyway, look, I you know, this is a tragedy. I'm not going to go into that. But the problem, of course, is that officials in both administrations have died at a rather alarming rate versus other administrations. I mean, both administrations were known as big on quote-unquote inclusivity, even though it rarely meant anything. By the way, when you look at her former LinkedIn page, Dana Hyde's LinkedIn page, one sees her title listed as co-chair partnership for an inclusive economy. And then guess what? That page is now gone. Most importantly, though, look at the circumstances. Dana Hyde is killed by, quote, blunt trauma, while the other two passengers are not even injured. I'm not going to talk about the crew. Crew are much more adept via both training and experience, keeping themselves safe and prepared. I can tell you this from experience driving a boat. Boat drivers can go crazy trying to move people around, you know, trying to use fast turns to make people roll out of their seats or whatever. The driver's always in control. Driver knows what's happening. So, I mean, in this case, the pilots, I'm not, you know, look, I'm not saying anything is untoward here, but given the history of the two administrations and the basic tendency toward Arkansas for Democrat types who may know more than is comfortable, the question is going to be out and around. In fact, I did pose it on Twitter. I did. I haven't gotten any responses, probably because I'm not sure many people knew who she was. If you Google her and look for her on Wikipedia's death notices that they talk about, she doesn't show up as a – she doesn't have her own wiki page. So I'm looking – that's, again, that's not apropos of nothing, but just kind of makes you wonder, did she know all that stuff? I mean, I'm sorry. I know it sounds cruel, but what? I mean, these people in these administrations just – I mean – bad turbulence? I don't know. Something just – that to me is just really weird. Moving on. Tucker Carlson has now, quote-unquote, officially blown the lid off the January 6th narrative. I say officially because we've known it was a ruse from damn near the very moment it happened. Anybody remember my friend Rich calling in on January 6th? And he said when I told him what they were saying in the news, he was like, what the hell? Yeah. Now, look, though the Dems are in CYA, Up Chuck Schumer actually took to the Senate floor to condemn Tucker Carlson's story. He went on to call on Fox News and Fox Chair Rupert Murdoch to stop Tucker Carlson from releasing any more J6 stories. And to continue the lie that Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick died as a result of the alleged attacks. Anyone remember, as I and numerous people noted almost a year ago, Brian Sicknick, even per his own family, died as a result of a stroke he had suffered days after the events of January 6th. He had not been hit at all during the events. He was shown walking around after the incursion. We also know that Mr. Shaman, or whatever, whoever, let's just call, I call him Korg. He looks like the title character. Remember that old Saturday morning kids show Korg, 70,000 BC? Anybody remember that? Look it up. Korg, K-O-R-G, 70,000 BC. Anyway, that's how I call him Korg. Anyway, we now know that Korg actually got a tour around the Capitol into the Senate from some of the Capitol Police folks. Korg currently sits in jail after receiving a 4-year sentence. Now, frankly, knowing that Korg may have been in cahoots with Pelosi et al., I really don't care what happens to him. He certainly hasn't spoken out about any injustice or wrongful prosecution or an excessive sentence. My guess is that Korg and or his family is the beneficiary of a nice financial windfall of some kind. We may never know that. But remember, if you read the book, The Godfather, not the movie, sort of briefly touches on it, but if you read the book, they talk about somebody who takes a fall is taken care of. We also know Ray Epps lied about his whereabouts, as well as in response to other questions, and Democrats knew it. We know there were numerous phone calls from, to, and between Ray Epps, Pelosi, and others. And yet, go on Twitter, and all you see from Big Left is that Tucker Carlson is distorting the truth, manipulating the video, or just spreading lies. Seriously, Big Left, that's your answer? You literally never any of this footage during the J6 Inquisition. You literally never reference any of this footage during the J6 Inquisition. You never let the American public know this footage was out there and what it showed, while you put people in jail and falsely impeached a president. You allowed your own manipulation of the footage in order to deny or sweep under the rug the very real occurrence of election fraud on November 8th of 2020. Liz Cheney is now saying, if they want new investigations, bring it on. Lady, you are truly stupid if you feel that's the way to go, if you really want that. Look, there are 10 Republican members of the House who voted to impeach President Trump. There were two members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, who sat on the J6 committee, who are no longer in Congress, by the way. Thankfully, they are no longer members of Congress. So it should be relatively simple to put those two in jail. As for the remainder of those voted to impeach President Trump, I'd say you best consider a few things. Number one, consider resigning your position in Congress and maybe even recuse yourself any and all steps in the naming of your successor, temporary or otherwise. Two, come clean on anything. Come clean on anything you know about manipulation of data, facts, video, testimony, or anything else that will free those present on January 6th who had no part in destruction of property or any physical altercation with Capitol Police or anyone else. By the way, as I talked about before, even my friend Rich, who left early when it was discovered by his employer, they turned him in to the FBI and said maybe he should be investigated. They didn't even have the decency to ask him directly. Number three, voluntarily testify against any and all congressional members, staffers, investigators, and counsel who both perpetrated and perpetuated this fraud. Number four, be open and honest in the role played by the Department of Justice, including the FBI, in this perpetration and continued fraud. Number five, I'm just saying this is a personal – look, you have much to answer to and for, and you have been part of an evil and awful fraud, an actual plot to subvert our system, played a role in ruining the careers, reputations, and lives of too many people to count. So your fate may not be a positive one, admittedly. But if you truly want absolution, I'd say this. Repent now. Beg forgiveness of those who, in all likelihood, harbor deeper resentment for you than they do those in the camp of DNC and Big Left, from whom they pretty much expect this kind of repugnant fraud. Look, I think it's pretty clear that the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the other groups need a complete overhaul. Obvious that the DNC, along with the rest of Big Left, will stop at nothing to gain power, to gain access to material and financial riches, and they pretty much, well, they'll destroy anyone who doesn't walk in lockstep with them. But really, it's time to start the house cleaning. Call out your liberal and progressive elected officials, especially if they are in your district. Call out your liberal and progressive neighbors. Look, turn away from your hypocritical liberal and progressive friends. I don't mean ostracize. I don't mean, but stop doing business with those people who align with all things liberal, left, and progressive. Look, you can be civil, but you don't have to be friends with these people. Look, I'm not going to continue to be friends with people like that. Why should I? Look, it's time. It's just time. We cannot allow it to continue like this. We just cannot. I got to get off because I'm going to, like I said to Duck in the chat room, I'm close. Okay, so the other day, Al sent me a link to the Hunter Biden laptop report. Now, it's a tonnage of info and links, and I confess, I've only perused it, but my God, how is this family still walking free? And that's not even the worst of it, though. That's not even the worst of it. There are agents, some in very senior supervisory roles and or in specialty roles that can't be done by just any FBI agent. We're slow walking and impeding all this for months, and especially in the months leading up to the 2020 presidential election. If President Trump is reelected in 2024, I'm not saying he will be. I'm not saying he won't be. I'm not saying I wish for it or not wish for it. Like anything else, I start to assess and inspect the candidates and choose the one that I personally like best. If President Trump is the nominee, he is my candidate in the general election. But if he is reelected in 2024, my sincerest hopes and prayers are that some of these people are the first ones to get the rope party. Seriously, I mean, in addition to all the Russia hoaxes, Russia rumors, everything else President Trump endured at the hands of congressional Democrats and big media, he was literally being attacked by people within the executive branch. In some cases, these attacks were perpetrated by people with, like, mega-high security clearance. Now think about that. Ponder it for just a bit. Somebody with major high security clearance plotting against a sitting president. People weren't even working an investigation of President Trump when it came to this laptop. They simply plotted against him. Let's take it further. Remember all the sick, delusional lefties that were floating around social media circa late 2016, early 2017? Remember their war cry? I'll remind you. Trump swore he'd get Hillary. He's trying to ruin its political enemies. That's against the law. Remember what he actually said? Remember what he actually – it was during a debate, and it was during a debate where, by the way, a certain candidate was getting a little help from a quasi-employee of the network serving as moderator. In essence, then-candidate Trump said, if I had been president, you'd be in jail. Now, again, let's focus on some context. He did not say, I will put you in jail. He did not say, I will bury you. What was left out of all the various sound bites? Yes. The further mention that she should have been facing prosecution after the slow walk investigation and the sham announcement by then FBI Director James Comey, who said with a rather thick coating of sugar that Hillary basically broke the law, but she wouldn't be prosecuted because he couldn't and thus didn't explain the because part. It was clear enough to understand that Hillary Rotten Clinton, as Vito calls her, was being protected by the FBI and the rest of the U.S. Department of Justice. Quite the 180, no? We literally have members of our the Department of Justice, law enforcement, and intelligence branches actively doing the very thing Big Left claimed President Trump was doing, i.e. targeting political enemies. And, of course, we still have them doing it. They're still openly attacking continued subpoenas, threats of indictments, the kangaroo court known as the J6 Inquisition. Not only investigating many of these things under false pretenses, but now we know they knew the actual facts of the events of January 6th. So let's just go. Let's just go there. The Bidens are criminals. There, I said it. I'll say it again. The Bidens are criminals. Hunter, Dopey Joe, whoever. Those two are just the ones getting most enriched. Make no mistake. The Bidens are criminals. Dopey Joe, Hunter, Dr. Jill, Hunter, Ashley, Hunter, Dopey Joe's brothers and sister, all of them, they're crooks. They are hoods. They are thugs. But not just them. Comey, Barr, Durham, Schumer, Schiff, Pelosi, McConnell, Adam Kinzinger, Liz Cheney, they are crooks. They ignored the laptop. They buried the facts of January 6th. They protected Hillary and Bill Clinton, just as they're peripherally protecting the Obamas and their third administration. Guess what? The laptop report is 644 pages, at least the version in the link Al sent to me. Now, go on Google and type in Hunter Biden laptop. It doesn't come up just as Hunter. It does come up as Hunter Biden laptop controversy. Controversy? It also points to a page headed Hunter Biden laptop conspiracy. So what's further down the page? Almost an afterthought? Yeah, an article that notes Hunter Biden and his lawyers admitted the laptop was indeed his. How was that presented? Well, as one could guess, it's presented with the idea that the repair shop owner, Mac Isaac, illegally obtained the contents and that it was unauthorized. Huh? Dude, you take a laptop for repair, that's pretty much open authorization to access anything necessary to make the repair possible. By the way, that goes double when you leave the damn thing for months without responding to phone calls that it's ready. But here is what Big Left didn't plan for and what galls them. Notified the FBI of the laptop and its contents. The FBI picked up the laptop in December 2019. What they didn't know or couldn't definitively prove, what they didn't know was that Mac Isaac had mirrored and copied the hard drive. In other words, had Mac Isaac not done that and not provided copies to Rudy Giuliani's personal attorney, Robert Costello, we might never have known about any of this stuff. By the way, this goes back to the second internet Laffy / advisory, sort of a corollary. You know, that one was, if government can break the law during an emergency, government will create emergencies to break the law. Well, in this one, it's caught breaking laws or engaged in corrupt activity. It's not the sleazy activity that's bad. It's getting caught and being exposed that's bad. They're literally going after Giuliani, Mac Isaac, anyone else. I wanted to read you this newsletter or letter from California Congressman Kevin Kiley because it really does summarize Big Left in sort of a nutshell. It's really quick. It's titled "The Acting Governor." It says, "Last week I wrote a letter to the governor of California asking the state to make a request for federal assistance to help victims of the ongoing storms. The letter was not addressed to Gavin Newsom. Instead, I had to send it to Acting Governor Eleni Kounalakis. Newsom had temporarily stepped down for a personal trip south of the border in Baja. He didn't warn anyone we were switching governors in the middle of a crisis, nor say when he'd be back, although he is back now. Our first responders, by contrast, have been working tirelessly, and I'm grateful the National Guard promptly answered my request for help after I spoke with the Adjutant General. I'm continuing to monitor the situation as I return to D.C. tomorrow morning. It will be another eventful week. Last week, in Judiciary, we passed a much-needed oversight plan for the Biden administration. but not before the House minority tried to gut it and shield Biden from scrutiny. I spoke out against this attempt at dereliction, and we defeated it. Okay, there's a little more, but basically, it's only in Big Left do elected and appointed leaders feel no duty or obligation to do their jobs, especially during any local, regional, or national crisis. My God, the nation sees President Trump head to East Palestine, Ohio, and Mayor Pete, our Secretary of Transportation, doesn't show up until days later. And Dopey Joe probably still hasn't shown up. Obviously, he hasn't shown up mentally. How does the big media crew of Big Left handle it? They actually lauded the appearance by Mayor Pete, even after he made a complete ass of himself. By the way, that's his default behavior, so they probably don't even really notice it, I guess. Still, does our collective national brain not see all this? This is frightening. It really is. I'm going to bring in Hawkeye Mike for a couple questions. Mike, how you doing?
Pretty good, Hank. How's it going?
Oh, not bad. So you
not
heard
so
a
good.
Couple
of... like at least politically.
Yeah. Well, you heard my initial rants. Is anything going to come up? Is anything going to come up? Come of the January 6th stuff? Do you think?
Well,
legally,
it depends on what you mean by that. I think that it's really interesting that the Democrats just the notion that these tapes would be released to the public. You know, it just seems to scare the hell out of them. They're just you know almost apoplectic. That they've been released. That this, I guess they think that unless it goes through the filter of the Democratic Party or that old January 6th committee, the American people won't be able to properly process or assess what's on the tapes. And you know, and they're probably right from their point of view because I think if you and I assume you did, you saw Tucker Carlson the last couple nights.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it looks and I kind of had the view that this was probably what was going on. 95% look, I'm not these people that went into the Capitol, even if nothing happened, it was criminal trespass at a minimum. Now, they've been overcharged, and this shaman guy, Jacob Chansley, or whatever the hell his name is,
yeah,
was, I think, sentenced to like 4 years in prison. It was, for what? Wandering around taking selfies? I think that's just way over the top. And I think 95% of the people that went into the Capitol, that's basically what they did. They wandered around peacefully, taking selfies and, you know, having a good time. And there's probably some 5% that engaged in some violent or destructive conduct. And they should be charged accordingly.
Yeah,
but the
I have no objection to that.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
what was
so,
the plot? They're going to put Chansley, who's going to become the provisional president of the United States. I mean, give me a break.
Well, why was he getting the – I still don't get what was with his escort and his – I mean, that's what I don't get. I mean, was he just –
I don't know.
Did you ever – do you know the show I was talking about, Korg 70,000 BC? Do you remember that show?
Yeah, vaguely, I think. It was like one of those kids shows that used to be on. Like
yeah, Saturday morning. It was like they were like a cave family. They talked in, you know.
Or whatever.
Yeah, mono. It wasn't – that was Land of the Lost. No, Korg, they basically –
Land of the Lost, right, yeah.
They basically went around clubbing stuff and over the head or whatever and the eating shellfish that they could find. I mean, it was kind of – I mean, these people weren't even as developed as those little ones on – not the Sleestaks, but those Pakunis or whatever on Land of the Lost. But they did kind of talk. But that's what he reminds me of. That's what he reminds me of. He literally – I do not get what that guy is about. I don't – and I still
well,
think –
I mean, that hat with the horns and everything.
Yeah. I personally think that he was part of the whole setup. That's my guess, but I could be wrong. And I – you know, I still – I mean, is Ray Epps – is anything going to come of Ray Epps, do you think?
Well – The FBI has been very resistant. I don't know if you've seen a couple times when they've had Ray up there in front of Senate committees, and they've asked they've made requests for information about him, and he won't comment at all. So the FBI, the executive branch, is very resistant to providing any information, which tells me all you need to know, that this guy was an informant for the FBI, and there are probably a lot of other people. The problem was that he and several other ones, from what I've been reading, were actually encouraging the crowd to do a lot of the stuff they did, you know, to encroach into the Capitol and, you know, like take things back, you know, make everybody, you know, saying incendiary things. These were, if government informants, basically agents were doing this, I mean, that's an outrage. It's like those, like that story about the white supremacists that tried to have the plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, and it turned out that there was a bunch of informants that had infiltrated into that plot and were actually, basically encouraging it.
Yeah.
And it resulted in the acquittal of several of them. I think a couple did get convicted.
Yeah.
But the government should not be trying to create crimes, and that's the danger when you have people doing what this Epps guy appears to have been doing. But I think it's going to be very difficult to get the government, the FBI particularly, to release any information about Epps or anyone else. But I think that it's pretty apparent that Epps and others had infiltrated the crowd and were encouraging what happened on January 6th. And, of course, that doesn't play into the Democratic narrative. And anything that doesn't play into the Democratic narrative is trying to suppress as much information. I mean, we've seen it for, the last several years with everything from Russian collusion thing, which was a big hoax, up through the Hunter Biden, remember that was all a bunch of misinformation by the Russians.
Yeah.
You can just, you know, go from one thing to the other. And the COVID stuff,
I haven't even gotten to COVID yet.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, so that was all misinformation. Anybody that challenged the Wuhan, anybody that put forward the notion that this could have been caused by the Chinese through a release, either inadvertent or on purpose, but let's just say inadvertent, but it was the Chinese research at that Wuhan lab that caused COVID.
Yeah.
And they've been covering it up. And if you advance that theory, you're a conspiracy nut. If you sought to challenge the mask or the vaccine mandates, that was all misinformation. And it turns out that all of that stuff was valid. You've got the FBI and the Department of Energy saying that that's most likely what happened. I think there may be some other agencies, and they're clinging to the notion, well, we don't know. The administration desperately doesn't want to admit that that's what happened, because that's what Trump said all along. Remember,
yep.
He called it the Chinese virus, and he was accused of being a racist for saying that. And they asked him, well, why do you keep calling it the Chinese virus? He said, because it came from China.
Yeah, exactly.
and that's racist.
I know.
It's
unbelievable.
And also, it turned out to be true. It came from the Wuhan lab. Plus, there was gain-of-function research that may have been American-induced, it looks like, by Fauci in particular, that was going to fund that stuff. This is what the problem is with the Democratic Party. I'm almost as incensed about a lot of this stuff as you are, but the Democratic Party, anything that doesn't support their narrative is disinformation and should be suppressed. And their conspiracy parallel conspiracists in the press, in the mainstream press that go along with them, they're not interested in the First Amendment and free speech. They want to suppress anything that doesn't support what they believe, anything that doesn't support their narrative. And they're in cahoots with the press I'm talking about, with the Democratic Party and the Biden administration to do this. What has gone wrong with the Democratic Party? They don't believe in free speech, and they believe that misinformation, whatever that is, should be suppressed. Here's the problem with that, of course. It's so glaringly obvious it almost doesn't even need to be said. Is when you say that free speech should not that misinformation is not covered by the First Amendment and should not be allowed, the question I have right away, and it's unanswerable really, is who decides what is and isn't misinformation. That's
correct.
The problem. Well, the Democrats want to be the arbiters of that, and that's what's dangerous. That's what's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, hang on, and then we'll get back later after the break. But here's a, I'm going to go on to the next story. You may like this story.
Okay.
It's just it's lighthearted. So a woman finds husband's body while getting Christmas decorations from a closet at 8 months after he went missing. An Illinois man reported missing last April was found dead 8 months later in a hideaway closet in his home. He had died by suicide. He was 53. I'm not going to go into the names because that's mean. Reported that he disappeared April 27th of last year after calling his wife to tell her he was leaving work early, but she couldn't find or contact him after she returned to their house where his car was parked outside. During an initial search of the home, police were unable to locate the missing man. Later, a second search was conducted at the home after she complained, the wife complained of a smell. As she prepared for the holidays on December 11th, she went to look for Christmas decorations in a storage area behind a closed cupboard under a staircase in the home, she recalled to the Belleville News Democrat. That's where she found her husband's body 8 months after he was last seen. I decided to put the Christmas tree up, and I was... Yeah, she decided to put the tree up, was looking for a tote of Christmas ornaments, and that's when she discovered him. He had committed suicide.
Well, how inept are the police? When she called him in right after he went missing, they did a search of the house and couldn't find him.
Well, the police said they noticed a sewer-like smell.
Some hide a bed? Was that what you said?
Well, no. They noticed a sewer-like smell inside the residence, which they described as a hoarder home. Hoarder home, yeah, I guess. She said she understands why the police missed his body, telling the news outlet that they wouldn't have known about the hidden closet and that the smell wasn't overpowering. They also said the coroner said he was in a mummified state, explaining that it might not have it might not have a strong odor. Oh God! But yeah, isn't that a nice story? Break up the
week. It's like a hoarder place, right?
Yeah,
so
that's what they said.
Cats living there.
Well, yeah,
probably,
but if you read it, it's like it was
over the cat
under a staircase, behind a bed, under some boxes. I mean, yeah, it was kind of like, I mean, first of all, how did the guy, why did he go all the way down there to commit? I mean, I just don't get that. And something else must have been going on, but it's just kind of bizarre. So, hey, and I thought maybe you'd know about this story since you live out sort of in the WAC country. Have you been following the New Mexico State basketball story at all?
Not off the top of my head. You have to give me a little more detail.
So
on
I got this from a couple different places. So it's kind of odd. They suspended the season last month because of hazing, and then they canceled it a couple days later. Like I said, hazing. So well, maybe a bit more. Here's what goes. Per a report filed by one of the hazing victims, three players held him down, quote, exposing his buttocks, and began to slap his buttocks, end quote. The report further states, quote, he also went on to state that they also touched his scrotum. I'm just going to say right there, gross, gross. Okay, seriously, I mean, just because your team sucks doesn't mean you go on a creepy hazing rampage. But then the victim said this. He had no choice, quote, because it's a three-on-one type of situation. That's all I'm – okay, I don't want to hear any more about that.
Well,
so
I mean, if this is what – if this happened – why wouldn't he go and report, file a criminal complaint with the police? He was basically
he reported and said he didn't want to press charges for some reason. But here's where it gets worse. This might not even be the biggest issue. 3 months ago, a forward on the team shot and killed a University of New Mexico student, and police determined it was self-defense. However, New Mexico State and Albuquerque district attorneys continue to investigate after coaches and staffers were found to be in possession of multiple pieces of potential evidence, including the gun. And then, get this, the coach instructed the team to leave and return to campus, even though local police had asked to speak with three of the teammates who were with him. I mean, that's bizarre. Now, two guys have left the team. I'm not quite sure why that's a shock. It's not, obviously, but quote unquote they also touched his scrotum. I'm like, okay, I'm done with this.
Oh,
I'm totally done. So
TMI. Yeah.
So okay. So more on the J6 stuff. Okay. So Big Left has gone on the attack since then, and it's not a terribly thought out plan. So basically, the one attack, and they're going on with different, you know, basically the left is targeting McCarthy. A public citizen, a liberal activist nonprofit group is filing an ethics complaint against McCarthy for releasing the tapes to Tucker Carlson.
What would be the basis of an ethics?
Yeah, they said it was in violation of House rules. I don't know. Yeah, here's the thing. If releasing the tape was a violation, isn't withholding the tapes, at least the truthful nature of the tapes,
well,
isn't that also a violation?
Who filed this?
A nonprofit called Public Citizen, and it says it's a liberal
501c4. Okay, I didn't think anyone that wasn't a member of Congress could file. I guess I'm wrong.
Well, Guess who created this group? Ralph Nader.
Well, right. Okay, well, here's what you do with the ethics complaint. Bring it to the floor of the House and then let the Republican majority vote it down, and that's the end of that.
Yeah. I mean, but seriously, Ralph Nader. Now, wasn't it Ralph Nader who was all about openness and not holding back information like the Corvair and all that stuff on Safe at Any Speed?
Absolutely.
And here he's saying – for releasing it, it's a violation. So then
I don't
another
understand
one,
how releasing it was a violation. I mean, you have to explain to me what rule was violated by releasing the speaker who should have the ultimate authority to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So then they ran a story
releasing it was a violation.
Not
releasing it was a violation.
Yeah, which was a violation. Withholding truth, telling truth. I mean, that I don't get.
Well, again, this gets back to the notion, Hank, that the public doesn't know how to handle certain information correctly, and therefore it has to be withheld, or when it comes out, when this information comes out, it might go against or refute the democratic narrative of things. That's what's going on.
But then the other one they're saying is that it's causing a rift. I mean, Big Left is running with this stuff. I'm not sure how much any of it's true because it's Big Left. But they're saying it's caused a huge divide between Trump, McConnell, and McCarthy. Well, I'm not sure what rift it would create between Trump and McCarthy. I could see Trump and McConnell.
None.
Yeah, I mean –
I was disappointed. You probably saw yesterday when he came out and was condemning Fox and Tucker Carlson for releasing this. And you can disagree with Tucker Carlson's conclusions about what the tapes show.
Yeah.
But that's different than which, by the way, I think is kind of – I mean, I think – he had a lot of good points about what was going on, but that's one thing. It's another thing to go after Fox and Carlson for having the temerity to actually show some of the tapes. Now he said that was cherry picking stuff. Well, what was the January 6th committee doing? If you listen to Carlson last couple months, his whole point was they didn't want to release this stuff. They glossed over this stuff. They didn't release this stuff. They only cherry picked. I mean, was that okay? But he can't release other tapes and then give his spin on it. This is all within the purview of free speech, at least as I understand it under the First Amendment.
Yeah.
You can disagree with it, but to try to suppress it, that's what's going on here. And that's what's so anti-American to me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So moving on, here's a couple other things. One outlet, Great American News Desk website, had four people that supposedly are on Trump's list for vice president: Carrie Lake, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Nikki Haley, and Kristi Noem. Any reaction to any of those names?
I read something this morning about Carrie Lake saying she didn't know about vice president stuff. She's still trying to become governor of Arizona. Now, I know I've followed this a little bit about what's going on in Arizona, and I have to tell you, I don't have a lot. Look, I'm very sorry that Carrie Lake lost, but I don't think this has been aired through the courts, and they have not found any. She lost by about 17,000 votes out of 2.5 million, so it's a very, very tiny margin. But they have not, as far as I can tell, put forward any evidence to demonstrate that there's any votes out there that were not counted or that should have been counted or shouldn't have been counted that would have changed the result. I think her problem was, and I don't know how you remedy it, was that, what, you know, if you remember what happened on Election Day where some of the voting machines weren't working and people that were in line couldn't vote and stuff. So that may have affected the Republican turnout a little bit. But how do you quantify that? How do you find out who didn't vote that because of this? That's a problem. Now, here's the Republican, you know, you remember Trump at the CPAC the other day said, as long as this is the law, we have to learn how to, you know, use the system to legally, you know, to basically vote harvest and get our own stuff in. Republicans cannot rely on in the current system, which is awful, cannot rely on just showing up at the polls on Election Day. We have to do a better job of getting our votes out early, compete with the Democrats, and having the organization to do that if you want to win these elections. And it's, I'll tell you what, the sooner that they start to master this and sort of eliminate the Democratic advantage, then the Democrats won't be so big on it anymore.
Exactly.
We need eventually to get back to the, you know, everybody votes on one day and you go to the polls, you know, like we did for 200 years, like they do in Europe. I mean, you know, this is the only country that does this stuff. But the Democrats see an advantage in doing it the way things have developed. As soon as that advantage goes away, they won't be so keen on it anymore.
Yeah. Now, how about Sarah Huckabee Sanders? What are your thoughts on that? I think she'd be a good one, by the way.
She's just so new in office. It's going to be up to Trump. I think it's interesting that all four are women, which shows that Trump's pretty keen, I think, this time to bring in and probably smart if he's the nominee, to have a woman as vice president. I would say this. If Trump is the nominee, I don't think that's certain yet. I still think DeSantis could – we'll have to see how it goes. But, you know, Trump's probably the favorite. If Trump is the nominee – whoever is the vice president this time around, it's going to be very important because Trump can only serve one term. So immediately upon taking office, the vice president becomes the front runner for the next election. So it's going to really be important to the. It's okay, but to get back to just what I was going to say about Carrie Lake was, I'm not convinced she's the best.
I'm not convinced at all.
If you remember during the election too, she was like, there's hundreds of thousands of votes out. She was saying this after the, in the days after the election. And as soon as they were slow counting, but as soon as all that stuff comes in, I'll win easily. And I believed it. And it turned out they counted these hundreds of thousands of votes, and she never got the lead. So, I felt like I was a little bit, you know, sold a bill of goods on that.
Yeah.
And then I think, so you mentioned Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I think the other two were
Haley and Christy Noem.
Nikki Haley?
Yeah, Nikki Haley.
Christy Noem. I think those two might be better choices. If you remember, Nikki Haley served in the Trump administration as UN ambassador, so I know some people think she's not sure she would be, you know, how she said she's had some criticisms of Trump in the past. But if Trump chose her, that would limit, I think.
I think the one that's intriguing to me in a way is Christy Noem for this reason. She was very strong against the COVID tyranny, no doubt about that. And she was pro-business and all that. But remember, she vetoed the bill to prevent biological males competing as or against females. Remember, she vetoed that. She said it was because the NCAA would, you know, bar certain bar events from happening in South Dakota or whatever. And you know, to me, that's look who runs South Dakota, the governor or the NCAA? I think that's where I would have a problem.
And my reaction, her reaction should have been, so what if that's what happens? You know, you take the stand because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. You do the right thing. That's as simple as that. Welcome, Boy, bringing a Boy to the chat room, by the way. Okay, so Kevin or Gruesome Newsom says they're not going to do any business with Walgreens because of their stance on the abortion pills.
Their stance is their stance that they're not going to.
Remember, Walgreens has now said they are not going to sell the abortion pills because they say look, they're not going to fight it. You know, they're facing lawsuits or prosecution from at least 20 state attorneys general. So they've said, we're just not going to sell them anywhere. And,
okay.
You know, so Newsom says,
Does Newsom have the power to just ban them from functioning in the state?
Well, he just said they will not do business with them. So I wonder
how much business the Walgreens state government in California. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
But it sounds like if they're in trouble, if they do sell it with 20 AGs in other states as a business decision, I'm thinking probably they're better off to not sell it.
Yeah, exactly. So here's the weird part. You know who Kimberly Guilfoyle is?
Yeah, sure.
Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend. She used to be married to that guy, to Gavin Newsom. There's something
that just doesn't work,
you know. That's some kind of character stuff
where she shakes her head about him now.
And then now Kellyanne Conway and George Conway are getting divorced, which is kind of
I'm surprised it took this long.
I know.
The way this guy's been so anti-Trump.
I know. And now, what about have you heard the Atlanta riots? The Antifa and BLM people were.
Yes.
Okay, so here's the thing about this one that I really just like, whoa. They were at some concert of some kind, but then it says they changed clothes and dressed in all black. And they're reportedly changed to black attire and began throwing commercial-grade pyrotechnics, Molotov bombs, huge rocks, and bricks at police officers. And that?
Yeah,
well,
why isn't that called insurrection?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
by the way, did you see Tucker when he talked about this the other night? He put up a mugshot on the screen of all these clowns, and did you see what these people look like? It's like, you know, remember we used to talk about it back in college in the 80s, trapped in the 60s and can't get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see these pictures of these people?
It's literally for anybody who remembers the
montage of horrors.
Everyone remembers the Pentecrest in Iowa City. Yeah, anybody who remembers the Pentecrest in Iowa City, these people were definitely at the Pentecrest anytime Brother Jed was out talking. Here's another one.
Throwback to that.
Yeah, here's another one. This one is this week's entry in the actual hell file. There's a parental rights group called Our Watch. They're planning to file a lawsuit against the state of California to overturn that state's law that makes it a sanctuary state for minors seeking transgender medical procedures. In other words, California is actually a sanctuary state for minors seeking transgender medical procedures. I mean, what the hell is next?
Well,
minors
can't make decisions to have sex. They can't consent because of their age.
They can't
sign contracts. They sign are voidable because of their age.
Yeah.
They're not old enough to make decisions to join the military. They're not old enough to make decisions to drink.
Yeah.
And yet, these people, without their parents knowing about it, 12-year-olds, 10-year-olds, I don't know how low they're 5-year-olds maybe, should be able to make the decision to have irreversible gender designation surgery.
Well, listen to this
guy.
The guy that sponsored the bill, State Senator Scott Wiener, he tweeted back in when it got signed, he tweeted, Gavin Newsom signed into law our bill to offer refuge to trans kids and their families if they're being criminalized in their home states. Well, if the parents are okaying it, how's that criminal? But it says states like Texas
and
Alabama.
Did you say his name was Wiener?
Anthony Wiener.
So that's like the old sign from Seinfeld. You've actually got the library cop's name is actually Bookman.
So it says, here's what he says. States like Texas and Alabama are seeking to tear these families apart. California won't be party to it. We have your backs.
Well, wait a minute.
Seriously?
They're trying to prevent parents from having a say in it, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, exactly.
So
how's
that keeping families together?
I just don't get sanctuary state for for that. So anyway, hey, I'm going to start our new feature. I figured we have to do this new feature. So John Fetterman, somehow, don't know how, but John Fetterman is signing off on the sponsoring laws. He's doing it all, even though he's in the hospital for first for his stroke and then for depression. So I figured, you know, if this guy's capable of signing legislation or sponsoring bills, then I can put his ass to work. So I've decided we're going to start today, John Fetterman story time. So everybody, let's give a listen. This is John Fetterman story time. Listen close. Fascinating stuff. Here's more. Here's more. I'll tell you what. The only thing that would have made it more riveting is if I'd been able to get Happy Marston to introduce it.
That's like a throwback to the debate with Oz last fall.
I know. Exactly. I mean, it's literally, he's hearing Charlie Brown's teacher when people talk to him, and yet somehow, while he's inpatient for depression, he is co-sponsoring legislation. How in the hell does that happen? Okay, a couple quick laughies, and then we're going to take a break.
Unbelievable.
I know. So there's a couple quick laughies, and then we're going to bring in Avid Mike for our sports discussion. First, I don't know if you heard it, from the Babylon Bee, Juanita Broderick copied this on Twitter. It says, Ilhan Omar accused of appropriating Alabama culture by marrying relative. Oh, my God, that's good. And then here's another one. Fox News tweeted, Representative Jim Jordan criticized after saying only Americans should vote in American elections.
Who criticized that?
Exactly. And then this is the best.
Like, who's actually got a problem with that?
I know. That's just amazing.
If you go to that, what Jordan said, you're going to be getting rid of a lot of the Democratic base.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then this is the best meme ever. It's the Simpsons are sitting in front of the TV, and Homer says, I'm sick of this dementia commercial. And the next frame is Lisa saying, Dad, that was a Biden campaign ad. The stuff is too good. It writes itself. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and bring in Avid Mike, and we're going to talk some Hawk stuff. So we'll be right back, folks.
Good deal.
After, of course, we hand you off some Tommy Bolin.
Time comes, you can live too fast.
And that was Tommy Bolin, this month's featured great guitarists who are no longer here. We are back on Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Global Patriot Radio Network, found every day on blogtalkradio.com. Mondays with Vito and Big Al. Tuesdays, right now, sort of in flux. Wednesdays, me, Hank Jones. Thursdays, also in flux, although I am going at 1 o'clock tomorrow with a Hankerings episode, which will just focus on stuff I want to talk about. Fridays, Vito has been stepping in for Andrew with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is in with Real Interfaith Dialogue / Cross and Crescent Discussions. I've got Hawkeye Mike still with me, and I'm bringing in Avid Mike. Avid Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Not bad. So, guys, let's start with the big news out of Iowa City. And sports fans, this is – or non-sports fans, this is important because of what it – the politics involved. So out of Iowa City, we have a settlement in the Iowa lawsuit. Now, a little background. In 2020, several players had noted that there were some racism issues at Iowa. There was this lawsuit filed. Now, those who remember, I had Felicia Goodson on that summer. Her son, Tyler, played running back at Iowa as a rookie this year, on the practice squad of Green Bay. And she said at the time, Kirk Ferentz is not a racist. She also said her son, Tyler, was very shocked by the allegations, as he never saw anything like that, either from Kirk Ferentz or Chris Doyle. And another former teammate of his, Tyrone Tracy, I met down here. And Tyrone Tracy said he never saw any of it. So anyway, I'm going to start, Avid Mike, I'm going to start with you. Because Hawkeye Mike and I have talked about this both privately and on the show. So what is your thought? I mean, what from your perspective, what did you see with the settlement? Did you expect it? Did you think it was a good thing?
I think it was an inevitable thing. I think it was going to happen. I don't think the university and the state wanted it to go to court. We all know the coaches wanted to. I thought it may happen. A lot of rumors that it was going to happen January, just to clear up, you know, getting Brian a chance to go back to the NFL, you know, clearing up that issue with that. So I knew it was coming. I just didn't know when it was going to happen.
Okay, now the seven former players are not getting all that much. I mean, you know, lawyers.
No.
Hawkeye,
$190,000
apiece. Yeah, lawyers are getting their money first, you know. But, yeah, Kirk Ferentz actually reached a statement saying he was against the settlement. Now, a couple of state folks wanted some conditions. They wanted the termination of employment of athletic director Gary Barta. Hawkeye, Mike, I'll ask you in on this. Was that something they could even make a condition of paying for part of the settlement?
No. What was that again about what could be a part of the condition?
There were a couple. The state is picking up some of the settlement money. And a couple of people in the state appeals board said they'll only vote for it if Gary Barta is terminated as athletic director. Did they even have the authority to do that, to make that a condition of a settlement?
Well, I think so, because I think it was my understanding was a 2-1 vote to approve it, and the one dissenter was that he wouldn't vote. He didn't approve it because he wanted Barta to go as part of the deal. So, I mean, if there had been a majority that would have said, hey, look, we're not going to do this unless Barta goes, then he might have had – I mean, that would have been a difficult position. Then the university, I guess, or the would have had to make the decision about whether they wanted to go forward with the case and litigate it, or whether they wanted to accept that condition and get rid of Barta. I think it's interesting that he thinks Barta – is the one that needs to go of all the people. I guess it's because there's been some other prior lawsuits that
correct.
They, you know, I think it was the women's program.
Yeah.
That where they had some civil rights issues and stuff too. So, you know, maybe they just think.
Yeah,
this is a
fourth settlement for Barta as the AD for over $11 million. I mean, I'm not saying he is, but you know. The numbers don't lie, you know what I mean? So it's not all
been
football
either. But there were no complaints against him with regard to this issue. That's what I didn't get.
Right, that's
you know?
True.
So,
no,
Avid Mike, you mentioned the thing about, you know, maybe it being a way for Brian to get back, you know, that they could find a landing spot for Brian. You still think that's a possibility?
Nah, that ship sailed with the contract that they did back in, was it February? That ship sailed.
Right.
They're going to give him his year. And then if it doesn't pan out, then, you know, it's a win-win for everybody in that situation.
Yeah.
So I don't think so. There's nobody – is it, the silly season for coaching is over for the most part unless, you know, somebody just gets disgruntled and leaves. So it wouldn't even be – who would we get? You know, would we put Bud Meyer in then, you know? So
So, Hawkeye Mike, where does this leave Chris Doyle, considering everything was dropped like that? Do you think he is going to – do you think he's – I mean, you're a reformed attorney, as they say. Is there a chance he either comes back to Iowa or does he have any potential lawsuits out of this, do you think? Or would do you think that was taken care of?
Yeah, I'm you know, when I first heard about this, I thought – because there's part of the deal is there's no admission of wrongdoing by anybody.
Correct.
And that, of course, was the whole impetus for him to go, was that he was one of the, you know, primary, you know, offenders, supposedly. And so now they're saying that, you know, he probably feels exonerated. And I think that's part of the why Ferentz came out with that statement where he was, you know, pretty much against the settlement. I think he feels, you know, he pointedly mentioned that there's no admission of wrongdoing. You'd think that that would be something that he would like, but I think he thinks that this is kind of, you know, an admission of reality, that they're exonerated. They shouldn't have been, these charges were bogus to begin with. You can believe it or not. And so I'm sure Doyle probably feels that, well, whether he would have a cause of action. If you remember, it's been a few years now, when he left, he got a pretty big payout, and I thought it was sort of a – I mean, it was probably a situation where he didn't have any choice.
Yeah.
But my guess is to get the money, he probably had to sign some sort of release with the university that he couldn't, you know, come back at him or something in the future.
Yeah. Well, you from the beginning sort of thought that they should settle, but you know, after more stuff came out where in depositions players were recanting a lot of their statements. Were you still feeling that, or do you think they should have settled from the beginning?
No, I've kind of been back and forth. I thought from the beginning that they should settle. I thought that they would settle I've been around the block enough to know that that's what happens, that these things usually – there's always the sort of the impetus to settle these things and make them go away, which is, I think, why we had this now, because there's an aversion to risk. And any time you go to trial, any time you go in front of a jury, you know, there's a wild card there. You cannot be certain what's going to happen. I think Ferentz was, you know, if you read that statement, pretty adamant that he wanted to go forward. He thought that they would win on summary judgment, wouldn't even get to trial. So, and I kind of think, talking about the people that recanted, maybe they should have tried to, before they agreed to settle, they should have let the court rule on summary judgment and see what kind of a case would have been left afterwards, if any.
Yeah. Evan, Mike, you were going to say something?
Yeah. I mean, I found out a tidbit today that I don't know if everybody knows about, but Brian filed an appeal to not be taken out of the initial case. You know, how they did, what was it, without prejudice or with prejudice? When they named it, they pulled everybody out, and it was just against the university at that time. He filed late last week an appeal to have that reversed. That he wanted to go to trial, and it was,
so he wanted to remain in the suit.
Yeah, he wanted to remain in the suit and go to clear his name.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I would guess. Yeah, he did file. He also did file the motion for summary judgment because, again, and if you follow, there's several places you can follow as attorneys that have been following it, and you know, they said, as usual, as attorney speak, as Hawkeye Mike did, you know, you never know, but a lot of them said, look, these recants and stuff. I mean, you know, plaintiffs, attorneys changed, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that really didn't look that good as it, you know, as it evolved. But as Hawkeye Mike said, you just don't take your chances in front of a jury at a certain, especially our record lately, you know, Barta, they say, should never have lost that lawsuit the last one, the grease bomb Meyer suit, that he never should have lost that, and yet did. So,
well, that's
it's
why
hard
all
to say.
Of the coaches went with their own representation. They didn't use the universities. So,
yeah.
But here's
yeah,
the
what
other
does that
thing.
Say?
The other thing, yeah, the other bombshell that kind of, and I didn't know this, but it was the state that pushed for a settlement, not the university, because of exactly like Hawkeye Mike said, risk aversion. They were worried about going to trial and it being
yeah.
much bigger payout than what it was going, what it ended up being. So I think that, and that's why they did a 50-50 split on the money, and then why they wanted the stipulation of that they were going to pay half, they wanted to, you know, BARTA out. So
okay.
it kind of all starts adding up on why things went the way they did. That the state was really the catalyst for this whole settlement.
That doesn't
yeah,
shock
me. Yeah,
and
that makes sense to me, too. Yeah, it doesn't shock me either. I think that, you know, it's like it's risk aversion, and also as far as not knowing what would happen, and they could have been liable for a lot more money, but also the airing of dirty laundry that you would have had with a
right.
you know, full-blown trial. They
yeah.
don't like that either. And,
sure.
and I
yep.
think it would just probably not be good. So
yeah.
there's all kinds of reasons for this. Yeah.
Then that makes sense, what Avid Mike said, you know, that the state pushed for it. Because, you know, there were people tweeting and stuff, why is the state on the hook for some of this? Well, if they're the ones pushing for it, then that's why. That's why the state is having to pony up some. And I get that now. That's, so
yeah.
that makes more sense. So let's quick segue to basketball, then we'll get back to football. So, okay, so we know from last week, Caitlin Clark's Big Ten Player of the Year, probably should be on post.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Sanford, Sixth Man of the Year. That's kind of –
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He came
definitely.
On, and the Big Ten was – Big Ten was his season this year. It wasn't the whole
yeah.
season.
Yeah.
It was Big Ten, and he was rightly – he was such a you know, a spark plug off the bench, you know, hitting
yeah.
those threes. And oh, man, it was –
And
he's
Chris Murray,
next year, hopefully. Oh.
Yeah, Chris Murray was first team All Big Ten. Connor
mm-hmm.
McCaffrey, Tony Perkins, and Philippe Rabracha were honorable mention. That's the coaches. On the media side, Rabracha actually got elevated to third team. Now, here's an interesting one. You know, they have that each school names their player for the Big Ten Sportsmanship Award, and it went to Patrick McCaffrey. So I suspect that's a sympathy honor for you know for
yeah,
his
exactly.
playoffs. So okay,
yeah.
so we took a very large crap Sunday against Nebraska, and so we play
oh, yeah.
tomorrow. We play the winner of Wisconsin, Ohio State. Wisconsin swept us. We split with Ohio State. Nebraska swept us, and they're the 11 seed. So anyway, so okay, Big Ten tournament prospects. Hawkeye Mike, what do you think?
Well, I mean, Iowa kind of gets my head. I didn't see the Nebraska game. I had. Otherwise engaged during the time of the game. I didn't get to see it. Of course, I didn't want to watch it after I heard what the score was.
Yeah.
So I didn't think we would lose to them at home. And I don't understand how that could happen after we beat Indiana by 22
yeah.
in Bloomington. Iowa just has all year, they've played, you know, at times really well. And then they just, you know, lay stink bombs. The Eastern
yeah.
Illinois game comes to mind. The losses, this loss to Nebraska. The loss, you know, you can talk about some other losses to Ohio State,
yeah.
losing twice to Wisconsin. I don't, you know, you just can't quite figure it out. And, yeah, I mean, so we'll get the winner, Wisconsin, Ohio State. I think I like Iowa's chances. Even though we've lost twice to Wisconsin, they're both fairly close games. I think Iowa, you know, might like to have a third shot at them.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wonder if Iowa does lose and they'd be 19-13. I mean, is there? I mean, are they on the bubble of getting into the NCAA?
Nah, they're solid.
They're solid. Okay.
They're
going to
be like an 8-9. They'll be an 8-9 even without a loss. You know, even without a win in the Big Ten tournament.
Okay.
They'll be, you know, probably a 9 if they win, maybe win two games. They could maybe move up to a 7, but they're in that range of 7, 8, 9. I would like to be in the, you know, 8, 7, you know, that range, just so we're the,
yeah.
you know, the better
right.
side of the bracket. But we're solidly in. I mean, we have too many quad one wins.
Okay.
Quad one wins. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That got us in there. we do have a couple of quad three, Nebraska and Eastern Illinois, but, you know, losses. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's another level of the team that they're playing. They do what they did last year. They win a game or two. We get to a little momentum, and you know, right there in the final. So, I mean, that can happen too. I just with this Iowa team, I'm not quite sure what to expect sometimes.
Yeah, so how about Avid Mike? What's your okay, first of all, okay, assuming we're all going to pick Iowa, even though we probably know it's not going to happen. Hawkeye Mike, who's your pick to win the Big Ten tourney since we'll say you can't pick Iowa?
I think I'll stay with Purdue.
Okay. Avid Mike, how about you?
I'll go Indiana just because they're 2-0 against Purdue, and they haven't been really close games. They've been, you know, double-digit victories on both of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they you know, the way they kind of – we kind of torched them that we did, you know, with last weekend or whatever it was, that, I could see them, you know, putting it on their shoulders and going. You know, and doing well. So, but that Indiana's my pick.
Okay, I would go with Purdue. I just think they're, you know, but who knows? Anything, the way this season has gone, I mean, anything can happen. It seems like even in the Big Ten. So, Avid Mike, where are you predicting? Where do we land as a seed? I don't care which regional. Which seed do you think? Are you picking 7, 8, 9?
If we win, probably an 8, 9. If we lose, and Wisconsin's getting it handed to them. They're down. Last time I checked, they were down 36-18.
Oh, really? Okay, so that, you know, we play
Ohio State.
Yeah, Wisconsin is solid.
Scares me about Ohio State. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I think Wisconsin is one of those teams that, you know, 2 weeks ago was a solid in, and they're definitely a bubble team at this point, I think.
Yeah. The big thing for them is the losing record in the Big Ten. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a huge indicator. So,
and a loss to Ohio State won't help either.
Yeah. It'd be really bad for them.
Hawkeye Mike, where are you thinking we end up? What number seed do you think we're going to get?
Well, I think Avid Mike's probably for him, I think what he says makes sense, and if we win a game, say we go 1-1, 2013.
Yeah.
I mean, I like our shot at 7-8. I think it's possible we win a couple games or even win the tournament, we could move up to a 6. Maybe if we win,
I think 6 is our high mark. I think
probably
year we had a better team. Won the tournament and we got a 5. I just don't see how we move anything higher than a 6, unless we, you know, other than winning the tournament. You know, that's the only shot. So, back to football. I really want to focus on this year's recruiting class. We'll talk a little bit about the portal, but Avid Mike, run down the class quickly with your top few recruits. Give us your, you know, go
the
2023 class. The 2023 class that we've signed. So let's talk about some of those, you know, pleasant surprises, who's a lock, to, you know, that kind of thing.
23, you're saying, right?
Yep, the incoming class that some of whom are probably on campus now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm really kind of really high on the two wide receivers, the one from Tampa area, and I think the other one, he's from the Kansas City area, if I remember right.
Okay.
Because they're just big guys, and they've been kind of late bloomers, and they started to really pick up steam at the end. And they're, you know, they're kind of perfect Iowa, the guys, you know, like it's Dayton Howard. He's 6'5", 195. I mean, we don't have an X guy, you know, that big wide receiver. Sorry, my dog, whose name is Kinnick, by the way, is barking in the background. So I feel, you know, I think something like that, just, I think they put such an emphasis on it, and unless we go and get somebody else in the portal, those are, you know, like, those two could be the ones that really show up, and never doubt that somebody's going to show up as a corner, you know, like the kid they got at the end, that Terrell Washington, and he's a running back, but they say he could be a corner also, you know, he's just like a super athlete. So those would be my sleepers. I mean, the rest are going to be like, you know, the 4-star offensive linemen that we got that Trevor Lauk. You know,
yeah.
He could play
yeah.
just because we're thin. So I don't know. Ben Cuter, is it Cuter?
Yeah.
The guy that gets arrested. Yeah, I mean, who knows? You know, we're still kind of thin at linebacker. He could show up, depending on you know how it goes. I don't know. This is not like in the past where we knew, you know, Xavier Wampa is going to play a lot of time or you know
yeah.
that type of thing. Or so this is just a more kind of laid back class.
Yeah. So talk about the portal guys. Obviously, Cade McNamara is the big one, but that's kind of a coup. But mm-hmm. who else impresses?
You know, from what I've heard, the offensive lineman, the kid that's coming that originally was going to Virginia and then he changed to us. I cannot remember his name. Dijon Parker.
Yeah.
They say he's super smart and he's scratching the surface. I mean, he was at, you know, a super small school before this, and if
yeah.
he gets some actual really coaching, that he could be somebody that could be, you know, have a lot of upside potential. I would say he definitely is one to watch because we need that. And then Nick Jackson from Virginia, penciling
yeah.
him in at, you know, the replacement
yeah.
for is huge. Those, you know, that's what I look at, so is where we need them and the production they had prior. And I think those
yeah.
two are going to be huge, you know, stepping, you know, building off of.
Yeah. By the way, the person that Nick Jackson is presumably replacing pretty much won the combine, Jack Campbell.
Yeah.
Pretty much, I mean, just dominated. It just, you know, graded out higher than pretty much everybody else there. So that's pretty impressive to me that, you know, it wasn't just a lot of people.
Matter.
It wasn't just a system guy. It wasn't just a guy who played at Iowa type deal. I mean, he was obviously he is the real deal. So, what about Cade McNamara?
I mean,
what do you think Cade McNamara is? I mean, is he gonna just? First of all, he's got 2 years, correct?
Yep.
Okay. What did he see other than Bud Meyer? I mean, you know, it seems like. You know, I don't know. It just seems like that not a lot changed in terms of our focus. But I don't know. Maybe we have some of those guys coming in. So who knows? I mean, do you think he can be the difference in a very, you know, what's been a very pathetic offense? Do you think he can be the difference and make this a really good offense next year?
I think he can. The reason being is he the way his demeanor is when you listen to him talk. You know, when you listen to what's his name? God, I've already purged him from my memory, but he was
Spencer
always,
Petras.
Petras.
Yeah. He kind of deferred on all of his comments where McNamara, if you've listened to any of his interviews, he's just very assertive in himself and he's very confident in himself. And I think that's all we need is somebody that's confident that he can make the decisions right at the right moment instead of, wait a minute, well, if I do that, this could happen. And I think that's what Spencer Petras was. He was always second-guessing himself, where McNamara is just going to be like, all right, this looks like the best opportunity. Boom, I'm going to do it. You know, it's like boom, 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 done. So
yeah.
That's the biggest thing that I've seen. And from everything I've heard from other players that you know at Michigan is he was just a natural leader.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's also what that offense needed. You know, somebody that's going to come in and, you know, tell the offensive linemen to get their ass in gear because they're not blocking for them. You know, Spencer's like, oh, yeah, they're really good. You know, I understand that you're not able to do it. That's what I kind of got the sense of Spencer being, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think Cade's going to really, you know, hold people accountable.
Yeah. Okay, so let's think about some of the guys that left. Alex Padilla is going to SMU. Do you think he shows up at all?
No, bench warmer.
Yeah.
I really
yeah.
do.
How about Arlen Bruce going to Oklahoma
Arkansas.
State? Arkansas?
Kansas State
is Keegan Johnson. Kansas State is Keegan Johnson. Alex or Arlen Bruce, I believe, is Oklahoma State. I mean,
yeah.
I don't quite get what happened there. You know, with those two, I just don't get that. But whatever, it is what it is. But You know, and lastly, Justin Jacobs going to Colorado or to Oregon. That to me, that's the one that shocked me.
He chased the money.
Yeah, me too. Because of the way that our defense has such a great reputation, and he, you know, would help his NFL prospects to stay at Iowa, I would think.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He chased the money in my
NIL, I guess, right? Yeah.
I mean the Hawkeye Swarm can't compete with Nike.
Yeah, I think, like a lot of people said, that was Oregon. Well, you know, and you know, by the way, Tyrone Tracy mentioned that when I met him, that you know the NCAA's got to do something because it's the Wild West. I mean, when a player is telling you that, that kind of tells you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just kind of. So you know, I don't know. I just don't know what to make of it. So who's what about this transfer quarterback from Wisconsin? I forgot his name already. Dexter, I think, or
yeah, I know you're talking about. Is he just
a
pretty highly rated quarterback coming out of high school? But when he got to campus, he ballooned to like 260. And
oh, really?
And he had a connection to Bud Meyer.
Oh, okay.
Just as an arm for spring practice. Because realistically, the only arm we had because of Carson May leaving was, I am the worst with names today. You know what I'm talking about.
Joey Labus.
Yeah. So he was the only arm we had for spring practice. So I think it's potential. But it was also we just needed somebody to throw, you know, help with spring practice.
Okay. I gotcha. Well, that makes sense, though. I mean, that, you know, if we're short, I mean, that's what we got to do. So that makes sense, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so how about running back? You know, we lose Gavin Williams to, what, Northern Illinois, if I remember correctly?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And – so we bring in, we have Caleb Johnson, we have LaShawn Williams. Did we bring anybody in the running back room?
In the transfer portal, in the recruiting class?
Either one.
Recruiting class, well, there's that one that I said they kind of have as an athlete. Washington.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was a Purdue commit, but he's fast, and he's kind of a – I would say he's very comparable to Goodson. That type of is a smaller, like 185, 90 pounds, you know, like right around the 5'10 range. So I think he could be that. That's one. But I think they only went out and got one running back, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think they've always done reasonably well at running back, so it's not been as much of a problem. So, yeah, I'm just thinking.
Well, we forget about Jazeem Patterson. Oh, they got the kid from Florida.
Right.
Kanari Moulton.
Oh, yeah.
Another.
That's right. Yeah, he was
so
a late bloomer. Yeah. Okay, so it's looking, you know, reasonably good. And I think the bigger issue is going to be our offensive line. I just, you know, we picked up two guys.
Deep.
Yeah, we picked up a couple guys, Deshaun Parker, and I forgot the other one, but, you know, that to me sounds, you know, is the biggest issue. I don't know what Justin Britt's going to be able to do. He did not retire from football. I saw that. He has been injured. David Davidkov did retire from football. Is done with football, so he's still.
Did he finally retire? I didn't know if that was.
Yeah. At the press conference, and it confused people. Kirk just said on Britt that he was on track to. He's talking about Britt and Davidkov still being on track to graduate, but. It was only Davidkov that actually has to step away from football. So, you know, that's the.
It sucks because he was like the heir apparent, you know, at the offensive line because he was a 4-star coming in. You know, we just haven't had a good recruiting over the last 4 years, other than, you know, one or two people that at that offensive line. We've really had a lot of misses.
Yeah, we have. And injury stuff. I mean, that's been part of it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Hawkeye Mike, what is your thought on, you know, given our schedule, do you think we make it back to Indianapolis this year?
I think it's a good chance, actually. The schedule is favorable. No Ohio State or Michigan
in the regular season. Toughest game is going to be, I think, the Big Ten opener, like game fourth game of the year at Penn State. Penn State's pretty highly touted this year. But if you look at the preseason polls, I was surprised at where they've got them. I think ESPN had them at 13 with the top defense in the country.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, how much you want to put into that, but I think they've got most of the preseason stuff has Iowa top 25 team, and you know, the schedule's favorable. So, you know, the Big Ten West we'll have to see here. They've been not that strong, and I don't know that they're going to be that much better. So, I think Iowa's got a good shot. They're going to have to win at Madison.
Yeah,
that's always kind of the route to the Big Ten West. So that'll be a pivotal game.
Yeah. Avid Mike, what's your thought? Is there a shot of getting back to Indianapolis, a realistic shot of getting back to Indianapolis?
I think there is. Yeah, definitely. I don't want to put a percentage on it yet, but there is a real, very, very realistic. It's going to come down to, the West is going to come down to how well the three teams that dip their toe into the transfer portal do. And that's Wisconsin, Iowa, and you have to say something about Nebraska because they brought in a lot of players too.
Yeah.
So, and it's, you know, two new recruiting, you know, two new team, you know, coaches, and then Iowa actually embracing it. So I don't think Minnesota did much. I don't think Purdue did much. And they had a little bit, but they have so much more. I mean, they're no quarterback. You know, they didn't get anybody really in the portal, I think, at quarterback. So,
I think I told y'all what someone said, and it was not Tyrone Tracy, so I don't want to get him in any kind. But someone else said after Brohm announced that he was leaving for Louisville, he started texting players who had not declared for the portal, but he started texting players saying, you know, come on board, come on down to, you know, Louisville. And you remember what he said? Oh, we don't tamper. I mean, to me is just what a scumbag. So I, you know, good riddance from the Big Ten. So,
Charlie Jones one of those people?
Well, Charlie finally done. I think Charlie Jones could have had he not backed out. I'm still thinking that that Tyrone Tracy is the first person to play in consecutive Citrus Bowls for two different teams.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, I mean, I got to believe he was. You know, he played for us, and then, you know,
like our stat from last year. I was just going to say, I still like our stat better from last year. Because the team we started the 2022 season with in Kentucky is who we finished the 2022 season with Kentucky. I'll take that over Tyrone Tracy stories any day.
Right. No, but absolutely.
I was just saying that.
I mean, he's a good kid. I didn't get into too much with him about why he left or anything like that. But I did. He did say, by the way, that while he was at Iowa, Amir Smith-Marset is easily the fastest player that was there. You know, I was thinking, you know, what about Charlie or what about other, you know, Riley Musset? Oh no, Amir was the fastest.
He was the best wide receiver, I think, last 10 years.
Definitely. But, I mean, I was really shocked to hear him, you know. I knew Smith-Marset was fast, but I didn't know that he was literally that fast. He says, oh, no, it's not even an argument. You know, he just didn't even bat an eye when I asked him about that. So he did say he's as fast as Charlie, by the way. So
Charlie ran a 4.42 or something at the combine, didn't he?
Did he really? Well,
ran a decent 4.4 something.
Yeah. I mean, I think he'll get a shot. I think, you know, I think he proved he's a good serviceable wide receiver.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, he didn't do much in the return game, you know, which kind of shocked me.
That's our scheme.
But, yeah, it is. That's definitely our scheme. So that's a part of it. So, okay, well, guys, we've come up pretty much on the end of it. I wanted to get you know, the thoughts on some of the stuff, Hawkeye, the settlement. I think it's still going to shake out. I think we'll hear more. I mean, again, the state pushing for it, as Avid Mike said. I think it's probably another thing. I think is that they're afraid it was being used against them recruiting wise, or the I don't know why the state people would think that, but you know, it would seem to me that. But to me, I think the coaches wanting to fight it, kind of said, you know, we don't care if they use it against us because we know who we are. So that's, that to me is a refreshing response. But in the meantime, you know, it's not the maybe not the best look. So we'll see. In the meantime, thanks for being on, guys. Go Hawks this weekend. We've got you know, we'll see how it shakes out for the tournament. Last year was a great tournament. This year, I'm not so sure. The lead up to it certainly didn't look good last Sunday. So have a great week, guys. Thanks for being on, and we will talk to y'all later.
Thanks, Hank.
Later. Have a good one.
Thanks. Yep. Okay, so that is this week's edition, of course, of Hank Jones Poly Sports with some thoughts on what's going on in Hawkeye Athletics. Tomorrow I will be on at 1 o'clock with Hank Rings. I'm going to talk about a couple things. I'm going to talk about a lot of good Babylon Bee stuff just because it cracks me up. And I'm going to review a federal court ruling by an Obama appointee, of course, who declared null and void Missouri's Second Amendment Protection Act. And, of course, I'll delve into a little more of Tommy Bolin's music. So the Babylon Bee stuff is classic. I'm just telling you. So 1 o'clock tomorrow Eastern time. In the meantime, thanks to Vito and Duck and Bringing It Boy for being in the chat room. Thanks to Big Sister and the two mics for being on, listening on the phones. And the weird number that is popping, I still think it's a spot, but who knows. In the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. Have a great week. It is a good weekend if you're a college basketball fan. Most of the tournament's going on. We'll have Selection Sunday coming up this Sunday. We'll hear about that. We'll see where your favorite team and my favorite team all end up. And then, just for laughs, actually, no, as a treat, I'm going to send you out with Tommy Bolin with Gypsy Soul. Have a good one, folks. Good night, folks. Go with God. Bless you all.